Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Support for the morning show also comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. What a glorious day when we get to talk about taxes. It is, of course, generally speaking, the bane of our existence, something that is pretty much unavoidable, although certain people try to do that, and yet it is part of what it means to be a citizen of this country. And fortunately, there are smart people out there who can assist us in navigating the tax system here in the United States, and in particular to help us navigate through the new tax laws that are now in effect. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 brought about arguably the most significant widespread alterations in our tax laws since the days of Ronald Reagan more than 30 years ago. So it is a very different landscape in which we find ourselves. And so we have three people joining us today who can speak to this to a very, very large extent. They are all representatives, one way or another, of Andrea and Orndorff LLP here in Kenosha. And Kathy Andrea is one of the people at the helm of the firm. And with her today, two certified public accountants who have had many, many years of experience navigating the tax laws and helping people, Corey Ebley and Amy Trottier. And we are glad that all three of you are with us today on the morning show. We welcome
you. Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Everybody's loud and clear. Kathy Andrea, let's begin with you. Tell us a little bit about how you even got interested in this whole field. I mean, what drew you into the business in the first place?
Well, to tell you the truth, I have an undergraduate degree in social work. And I went to UWM and worked in Milwaukee in the Hispanic community for a few years in a community center. And one of my job was to help write grants and help other nonprofits with their reporting and things. And so I said, I'm going to go to school and get some skills in accounting so I can help some of these places. And that morphed into going back to school for my master's in accounting. And in the meantime, I moved to Kenosha and finished my master's degree and went for my CPA exam. And I was lucky enough to get hired during one of the summers of my master's degree by Tom Orndorff, who is the founder of our firm. He started the firm in 1980, and he was working with Kenosha County, helping them a little bit, even though he had a CPA firm on his own. He started it. I was his first employee. I was hired to help Kenosha County document some of their procedures, and it turned into a full-time job. And I was able to, he gave me the opportunity to link that background of nonprofit government. And so my specialty is working with nonprofits and government, and as a CPA, being able to help them with their auditing and consulting, all the ins and outs of that world. So, of course, I don't do taxes for businesses, but our firm does. I became a partner with Tom in 1989. And one of the things I always, he set the tone of our firm by putting my name first. He said, everybody knows me, I want your name. So, I don't know many people like that. And wow. He was that kind of person who wants people to get the opportunity. So, in 2009, Terry Schmidt, who's my partner now, and I, Tom sold his part of the business, and we became two women partners, and so we're a women-owned business. And this is our 10th year anniversary of being partners, so we're going to celebrate that. So the business has been 39 years now this year. And we've grown from my one being one employee to we have about 30 employees. We have quite a variety of people just because of all that different things we do. So we do the taxes, we do write-up business compilations, we help people install their general ledger system, their software, and giving advice in the community. And we also do audits and things. But we also have, in the government world, we do have a contract with Kenosha County. And so we have about, of those 30 people, we have about 18 people that work at Kenosha County in all different departments. So we have in the budget team, we have people, we have in public works, at the sheriff's department, in the IT, in central finance. We're trying to keep the taxes down for the citizens. We try to maximize revenue for the county. We look at ways to have better connections with the state. We're on state committees, helping that. We've hired social workers. We've had employees as psychologists, just different things because we do a lot of different advice. One of the things that we're kind of proud of is in the area of human services, our people have been working with trying to get more Medicaid reimbursement for our services. And in 2011, the county was getting about $1.6 million in reimbursement. And that what that is it, when we give services or the nonprofits that work for the county give services, that pays for those people to get counseling and to get mental health and a lot of different services. And so it went from 1.6 in 2011, and this in 2018 is 7.5.
Wow.
So we've increased that reimbursement, and that means we have better services in the community, and the county's able to serve and, really provide those services without using the local tax levy.
Yeah, that's terrific.
So I think Kenosha County's been very almost avant-garde in letting us, work with them. And we've also had contracts with Milwaukee County too, and worked in their family care program. So that's kind of our shtick.
Yeah,
we're really proud of our for-profit team, and I think we have a great team, a lot of experience here, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say and learn more too about the tax laws.
Absolutely, that's complicated. Before we turn to them, I want to ask you one other question. You've been doing this over the course of a time in which technology has, I should think, drastically changed the way you do what you do. I mean, just think about what your office looked like when you started versus what it looks like now, and just the heart and soul of how things are different from technology. What would be the most dramatic ways?
Well, I hope you're not saying I'm really old, because I've been here.
But if you're old, then I'm old.
No, I remember when I first started working for Tom, we had the ledger paper. The county had a Burroughs machine where the lady had to wear plugs in her ears because she'd go ba-boom, ba-boom, would make these loud noises. And so we've gone from those, you had to white out, if you added something up wrong by hand, you had, a column and a row, and you had to re-add it. And so I've gone from that, and I think we actually brought the first computer into the county that it was like Apple computer. Anyway, too, now we're, people can, speak to the computer and it changes. So we can upload, we can scan things into the system. The software is just so intelligent. And when we still have to know what we're doing, obviously, because you have to check it out. But, you know, people go, I hate to mention it, but they go to TurboTax, because they can just do it on their own. Well, our focus is helping people that have a higher level of issues. We're a CPA firm, of course. We're helping. We'll take anybody that needs help that way. But
where their situation might be complicated, or they might be in trouble.
Sure, right. And businesses. The technology is unbelievable, and it's so much more fun. I don't think I would have stayed in accounting if it was that, those pencils and it was so tedious. And now you can take loads of data, download it, massage it, make pivot tables, and really come up with the data that you need. In fact, the technology is going in the audit world where you won't even need, all the documents will be electronic. They are now. Most of the are scanned in, and you can just look online. They're going to have what they call blockchain. I won't get into that, but everything's going to be, right there on the internet and very secure and things like that. So, it's changed quite a bit, and it's continue to change. You know, it's just going to be, it's crazy. It makes it more fun, though, I think.
Well, and I guess the two of you, Corey Ebley and Amy Trottier, you've seen some of those changes as well. If you've been in the tax preparation business for 20 years or so, how would you say, for the work that you do specifically in the tax realm, technology, how has that changed what you do?
I think we can process data a whole lot quicker, obviously. I was sitting here listening to Kathy talk about 13-column ledger paper, and I was thinking about all those hours that I spent, you know, balancing depreciation tables and everything else back when. But I think mainly the data process and the speed of processing, and then even transmitting clients or transmitting documents between clients or your employer and stuff like that is a lot easier than it used to be, obviously.
And I think it's given us the opportunity to kind of change the services that we offer, too. It used to be a CPA was strict pencil pusher, get tax return done, get it all written out. Whereas now our software can do so much of the busy work for us that we have more time that we can spend with the clients trying to plan for their future and make sure they're not going to have any surprises the next year. So technology has helped a huge amount in that area.
So in some ways it has freed you up to do some of the work that is especially important in terms of almost like preventative care from a physician, that kind of thing.
Exactly, right.
For those of you just joining us, we have three people here from Andrea and Orndorff LLP, or A&O, as we'll probably refer to them from now on. Kathy Andrea, who co-owns the firm, and two of her certified public accountants are here, Corey Ebley and Amy Trottier, who do lots of work specifically in the realm of taxes and tax preparation. Amy, I was noticing in some notes from a talk that you gave not too long ago, that you described the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 as the biggest tax law change since Ronald Reagan back in 1986. It's really incredible to think about that. What leads you to frame this in such dramatic terms? I mean, in what respects is this that drastic a change?
Well, you know, I think some of the changes that we've had in the past with other presidents, we've had maybe one or two areas of the tax law that had a big change. This particular change that came through, we saw pretty much every area of taxation affected. Corporations, individuals, estate law, there were so many changes. And so many things change that have kind of been standard for so long. Deductions that people thought would never go away are gone now. And tax rates lowered to a point that people never thought they'd see either. So it's just a really big overhaul in all areas of taxation, I think.
Interesting. It brings to mind, however, speaking of certain rates coming down, Kathy Andrea, you were saying in an email that a lot of people are actually getting very unpleasant surprises, however, those who have prepared their taxes, that they have smaller refunds than they have had in the past or smaller refunds than they expected. But you were really cautioning people to not get into the business of comparing your refunds too much. What would you have people do instead?
Well, I think that the real test is what was your tax liability. So what did you owe last year? Not net, you know, the cash you had to pay, but on your form, what was your tax that you owed compared to what is your tax that you owed this year? Because that's really, you know, where you get the sense of how the law has changed.
Well, and so, if the law is helping you or hurting you,
has
it helped or hurt your tax liability versus, because what you get or don't get as a refund, that is directly tied to what you had withheld.
Yeah. The withholding is the trick, so you know, they can talk more about that.
Right.
It was what people.
In fact, let's talk about that because, again, Amy, in your notes, I noticed that one of the first points you made was that there was a fairly dramatic change in the withholding tables. Both of you can jump in and explain this. At what point did that occur, and what kind of changes were made in the withholding tables? We don't talk about that very much. I mean, why did that happen at all?
Yeah, I think that's something that people don't really realize is happening in their paychecks, especially somebody who's an hourly worker and maybe their net check varies from week to week anyhow. So I believe it was February of 2018
it
that tables
right
changed.
It was right after they passed the Tax Act. It was, okay. I can't remember.
I think the act passed in maybe late November 2017, and so things right. would have gone into effect then a couple months later. Maybe.
Yeah, I think they gave employers a little bit of leeway there to get caught up. But so if you didn't realize that your withholding changed, you might not think to check that out. So they lowered the tables because the tax brackets were lowered, and that meant less withholding coming out of your checks. So some people who maybe their tax liability really isn't changing under the new tax laws, but their withholding went down from their paychecks,
wow.
they're the ones who are getting the surprises now.
The unpleasant surprises.
Yes.
I think, like Kathy said, you have to look at the tax liability rather than your refund, because not only did the withholding changes occur, the less withholding was taken out of your paychecks, but also there's changes to the itemized deductions. So people who are itemizing before might be limited on how much they get to deduct for their local and state taxes. That's limitations now $10,000, where before it could be above that, endlessly above that, depending on how much property you own or how much taxes you have paid. Another, they also took out the miscellaneous deductions, which I see is affecting some of our clients so far this year on their refunds, because a lot of times people have unreimbursed mileage for their jobs, where they'd be able to get a percentage of those mileage deductions on their itemized deductions, and they don't have that this year because the miscellaneous deductions are wiped off the itemized list. So I think those two things, along with the decreased withholding, are affecting people's refunds this year.
Right. And I suppose that really varies from person to person, because there's one person who that matter of mileage it has nothing to do with them. And then somebody else, it's a very big part of what they do and very significant. And that's why we probably can't generalize that these new tax laws are awful or these new tax laws are wonderful. It really depends on who you are and your particular situation.
Sure.
Explain in the most basic sort of way how the tax rates themselves changed. Remind us about those numbers, not the withholding numbers or the deduction numbers, but just the essential tax rate. What were those changes, and in general, who did they most powerfully affect?
Well, the higher income taxpayers, I believe, because the highest tax bracket went down from 39.6% to 37% now with the new tax law. There used to be seven different tax levels, tax rates, and now there still are seven different ones. It's a more graduated pace up to the highest one now, where before it went from 15 to 25 to upper 20s to 30s. Now we have a 10, 12, 15, and higher.
So where the steps are is kind
right.
of different.
Correct.
Yeah, so the rates probably went down a couple points. I think mm-hmm. there's only one bracket where the rates didn't change at all, and that's in the higher income brackets. But then the actual range of the brackets got wider, too. Mm-hmm. So more people are falling into lower brackets if you're on the lower end of the income spectrum. The higher income people probably aren't seeing as big of a change in rates dropping, but
you folks, I think, work with both individuals and businesses, and I'm guessing mm-hmm. when we're talking about businesses, we're probably talking about small businesses mostly.
Yes.
So in general, what is the difference between how life has changed for the typical individual taxpayer versus how has life changed for the typical small business in the wake of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017?
I think small businesses have some opportunity for some big deductions. As far as the 179 deduction was increased from $500,000, you can expense in a year to up to $1 million you can expense in a year. And what that deduction is if you buy an asset that you usually have to put on the books and depreciate over a certain amount of time, there's a 179 deduction that you can actually depreciate all of it in 1 year, up to $1 million you can do that. And also the special depreciation bonus this year went up to 100%. So you have two. You can deduct 100% of your asset two different ways, either through Section 179 or through the special bonus allowance this year, which is 100% of the asset you purchased. So you can buy things and deduct it all right away rather than waiting, spreading it over time.
Interesting. That could have a huge
Absolutely.
Impact, again, on whoever's you happen to be. I was just looking at the which you listed here for the individual tax rates. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you say, Amy, in explaining this chart is that the brackets have gotten wider. And then also, as we just said, the rates have decreased for most, but in a couple of cases it stayed the same. But mm-hmm. what would the point be for widening a tax bracket?
Widening the tax bracket, I think the hope there was that that would help people's tax rates go down lower. So maybe someone who was right on the cusp before of two different brackets would fall into a lower bracket then, and they'd get to experience some of that tax savings then.
So that's where that relief might come.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, what we've already touched on is the matter of deduction, how that has changed in really huge fashion. Explain the most basic change, which was the most dramatic. I mean, the thing that got wiped away that changed this for just about everybody.
Mm-hmm. So probably for individuals anyhow, it would be the itemized deductions. So one of the really big changes, especially for a state like Wisconsin, where we have high income tax rates, we have high real estate tax rates, the sum of your state income taxes paid and your real estate taxes paid cannot exceed $10,000 anymore. You used to be able to deduct the full amount. So that was a huge hit for people, especially here.
So now you can only deduct a certain amount, and you said up to $10,000.
Up to $10,000, yes.
And after that, you don't get to deduct at all.
Right, right. Anything else is just a lost deduction. So we see that with a lot of our clients that their state income taxes alone will exclude them from deducting anything else tax-wise.
They'll be up that high.
Wow. So that's a big one. And then as Corey had mentioned earlier, those miscellaneous itemized deductions are gone now. So a lot of people that were salespeople, the way their jobs are structured, a lot of times they put the cash out there for their gas and entertaining their clients, you know, providing, you know, gifts and things like that. And then they would deduct those things on their tax return. And sometimes that was a pretty sizable amount, depending on the person. That type of deduction is gone completely now. It's not even available anymore. So a lot of people are seeing a big change on that, too. So...
Well, you can see how this could really make the difference, even though your rate has gone down. If some of these other matters really affected the tax you paid, if those have gone in the other direction, the situation for a given person might not necessarily be better at all, and might be worse.
Correct. Yeah, and another thing that kind of related to the itemized deductions that went away is personal exemptions. So it used to be that you got a roughly $4,000 deduction for every individual in your family that you're
claiming. Just for existing,
you got $4,000. So that went completely away as well. That deduction no longer exists. Now, the theory was they were increasing the standard deduction, so that would help to make up for that. But where it doesn't make up for that is maybe if you have a large family. If you have a family with three or four children, you used to get $4,000 for each of those children. Now that's gone, that higher standard deduction isn't making up the difference anymore.
Right. So how about for somebody like my wife and I, we have no children at all, just a golden retriever. So so for us, how has our standard deduction changed?
Well, of course, depending on your situation again. You know, you may be able to itemize. You're going to lose roughly $8,000 in deductions for those personal exemptions, though. So it is possible that between the two, you may have less in deductions this year because of that.
I'm just seeing on your chart, it says 2017 standard deduction $12,700, and then 2018 standard deduction $24,000.
Right. So that almost doubled from last year's tax laws, right?
So that might not necessarily make up the difference.
Not for everyone, no.
Right.
No, and especially, you know, we have, many clients who are very charitable. So that used to make a big chunk of their itemized deductions. Now you know, it's not enough, and they're not getting to deduct those charitable deductions.
That's what I'm worried about in our world, is the nonprofit suffering, because people, maybe not this year, they realize some people give because it's a tax deduction. I'm, you know, sorry to say,
sure.
Hopefully most people don't. They give because they want to support the organization. But some people are, at the end of the year, you get the annual letter and you say, oh, I'm going to do it now so it affects my taxes. Well, the standard deduction, you know, cuts that off, so, and people don't get as much of that. So we hope that people still give to their communities,
right.
You know, services, so that doesn't suffer.
Yeah, that would be terrible,
so
if that ended
be,
up being an unintended consequence of
yeah,
this, that charitable giving is discouraged. Corey, explain the specific numbers of that. I mean, we still get something deducted for charitable donations.
Sure. Well, you're comparing standard deduction to itemized deduction. What Amy was talking about before and what you're alluding to is the amount of the standard deduction doubled this year, practically doubled, or did double for personal people, individuals, and also married couples. Up to $24,000, but like Amy was saying, perhaps last year you had a standard deduction of $12,700, plus let's say you had four people in your household, a mom, dad, and two kids. That's another $16,000. So you have $16,000 of personal exemptions plus $12,000 of your standard deduction. That's $28,000 of income you're deducting from to make your taxable income. $28,000 deduction right there. This year, if you have the four kids, and you're married, you're filing, and you're not itemizing, you get a straight-out $24,000 deduction. That's it. You miss out on $4,000 right there. And obviously, that can be changed in various ways, but that's one example of how you could be losing out on that by filing, by claiming the standard deduction.
Mm-hmm. So what do you... I suppose part of the situation with people having their taxes done this spring is that, in a sense, it's too late for them to have planned for what these changes would be. And I suppose part of it is that this all kind of came about so quickly. And I suppose for you guys, it was kind of a mad scramble as well to understand what all of this is about. How did you go about trying to kind of take in all of these changes?
Well, I don't know how quickly you can say it was. I mean, like you said before, it was passed in late 2017. So we've had a whole year to kind of adapt and get ready for it. I think that's a common conversation we have with clients every year, though, is, boy, should have been here early, should have done this, should have done some planning ahead of time before, so I could have been ready for this consequence of whatever happened throughout the year. So I'm not sure that's the right way to look. We had opportunities to be prepared.
And didn't maybe take advantage of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. And, you know, we did try last year, you know, when the law got passed, we tried to learn as much as we could before our busy season started so that, you know, we could answer questions when clients came in. And, you know, we tried our best to make some good guesstimates on what might be happening with the withholding tables, for example. And, you know, we tried to, every one of our clients, when we met with them or talked on the phone with them, we tried to say, okay, this is what we think may happen next year, you know, this is your situation, and maybe try and warn people that, you know, you may need to tell your employer you need to withhold another $10 a week out of your paycheck or things like that. So it was kind of a crash course in learning everything. And then obviously we fine-tuned it over the summer and fall. And people that we thought would really be affected, we get back in touch with them and say, okay, well, we got a little more clarification on this. This is how this is going to work. And
right. Well, and but I guess that's part of what I'm saying is, you know, at that point, it's halfway through 2018. So half the year is gone in terms of what you have withheld or certain
mm-hmm.
other decisions that you've made. And, but people certainly should have some clarity now as we're in 2019 about what they need to be doing in this current tax year to try to make the returns of 2020 a little more pleasant for them.
Correct.
Now, this has been good for some people. I mean, we probably shouldn't paint too bleak a picture, although for a lot of ordinary people, it seems like this has not turned out all that well. It what we sometimes hear is that these changes, if they benefited anybody very clearly, it's people towards the top of the scale. Is that fair to say, or do you think that is a mischaracterization of what these tax laws have wrought?
I'm not sure you can issue a blanket statement like that, maybe, because I'm sitting here thinking about, Well, this, for people who maybe don't itemize regularly and they used to claim a standard deduction, well, they get a bigger standard deduction now.
Hmm.
And yes, maybe they lose out on that $4,000 personal exemption for their kids that we're talking about and for themselves. But they also have a new, the child tax credit went up to $2,000 this year.
Hmm.
So $2,000 per child under 17, that's a big help to offset those other issues that maybe you're not recognizing.
Right. So there are certain people then that where this actually has bent in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be just certain people with certain situations where it's
not
quite so fun. And for them, they need to, more than anything, is the simplest solution to adjust their withholding.
That's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is planning, too. If you know you're going to have a big chunk of income that's unusual during the year, get in touch with someone to run those numbers and see how that's going to affect you. You never, as you know, a taxpayer, you don't necessarily know if you're on that cusp of falling into the next tax bracket. I don't know how many people are aware, there's a 12% bracket, and if you cross over into the next bracket, your rate goes up 10%. So that's a big jump if you have an unusual piece of income that comes in and all of a sudden you're paying 10% more on everything that you made during the year. So
gulp.
Yeah.
By the way, Amy, in your talk, you talked at one point about something that I'm not very familiar with at all, the AMT, the Alternative Minimum Tax.
Yes.
And you say this is something that is not actually going to be in effect for as many people as before. What is that AMT?
Okay. So this is an idea that even us accountants struggle with sometimes. But basically, to put it simply, the alternative minimum tax is a tax that was put into place many years ago to guarantee that if you have high income, you're not going to get out of paying taxes by having a whole bunch of deductions you can take to reduce that income.
Hmm.
So if you are subject to the alternative minimum tax, there are certain deductions that you're not allowed to take.
Hmm.
So that was how they were trying to remedy the situation.
To make sure that certain people don't get away with paying nothing. I mean, even
exactly.
It was legal under the old system, but that's just, we don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see people entirely, in a sense, escape tax
right,
burden.
Right. And what has happened over the years is they made very minimal changes to the income thresholds for the alternative minimum tax. So we were seeing more and more middle income to, people that are, on their way to being high income that were becoming subject to this alternative minimum tax. And they really weren't the initial they weren't meant to be the ones that were paying this sort of tax.
Mm.
So they've remedied that with the new laws by increasing those thresholds. And a lot of our clients, the small business owners who are in that upper to middle class tax brackets, they are seeing a lot of positives because of that threshold increase. They could be saving thousands of dollars just from that one law change alone.
Interesting.
Yeah.
For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with three representatives from ANO LLP, Kathy Andrea, Corey Ebley, and Amy Trottier. We're talking taxes today. And speaking of businesses, and when you work with a lot of small businesses, what would be the most significant changes in the tax laws for businesses? What sort of ramifications are they seeing? And are they positive or negative?
Well, the big one, the big one they're talking about, they can't stop talking about, the QBID deduction, Qualified Business Income Deduction. That's a new pass-through deduction where you can deduct up to 20% of your qualified business income. Now, there's been some hesitancy on actually defining what that qualified business income can be, but for mostly it's going to be for all pass-through entities. All sole proprietorships will be eligible for this 20% deduction, where 20% will come off your taxable income just like that. It's also for partnerships and S corporations. It's not for C corporations. It can be used for trusts and estates also, though. That's a 20% off the top of your taxable income you take off. It does not affect your self-employment tax you might owe. Do you have anything to expand on the QBI deduction?
Yeah, so I mean, this is a pretty big deal to have 20% of your small business income not be taxable. We've seen that being a huge help to a lot of small business owners. And like Corey said, big thing to keep in mind is that 20% reduces the amount of income tax you're paying, but it does not reduce the amount of self-employment tax right. you're paying, which for those who don't know, self-employment tax is basically Social Security and Medicare taxes. When you work for someone, the employer pays half of your Social Security and Medicare, and you pay half of your Social Security and Medicare. If you're self-employed, you're paying 100% of those taxes. And so those can add up pretty quick. Yeah. Unfortunately, this new deduction does not reduce your income for that, though.
But it does for the other. This is the section 199A that you were... And
we got to put a number to it, right?
Absolutely.
We don't want it to make sense or anything.
Sure, right. But yeah, I can see how that... And it's interesting how, at a glance, that looks like a fairly simple matter, and yet a small business owner has to figure out, or you have to help them figure out, what qualifies to be part of that that 20% deduction.
Sure. Future court cases will decide what QBI is going to be, qualified business income is going to be. But for right now... there's actually put in place some safe harbor rules where if you can meet all these safe harbor requirements, you can be for 2018, you can take that QBI deduction for your business or your pass-through rental or partnership, and you'll be safe from them ever revoking that for 2018 if you can follow a couple of safe harbor rules, which include documenting the hours that you put into the property or to the business. It also include keeping separate books for each property or business you own, things like that. And we at A&O have all those rules that we can help you with, so you can take advantage of that safe harbor for that deduction.
Thank goodness for that. What about the changes that have occurred in estate law and estate taxes?
Well, the biggest one that people have probably talked about is the increase in the level that estates become subject to estate taxes. So I believe I don't have exact numbers in my head, but I believe it's around $11 million. $11 million now. So if it used to be at around $5 million. So somebody who had $5 million in assets would have to file this tax return and potentially pay taxes on the assets that were left in their estate after they were gone. Now with this $11 million limit, we're seeing a lot fewer people that are going to have to pay estate taxes when they pass away. So that was a big deal.
So for those who are left behind, they get more of that money back because less of it
will
be dispersed in taxation.
Yes, because in the past, as much as 40% of the estate could have been gone due to taxes. So.
Well, you know, just talking through this, it helps me understand how complicated the world of taxes is, even when you do something that supposedly simplifies it a little bit, and maybe did in fact simplify it in some respects, but there are just so many different pieces, and it is no complicated matter to figure out how to ease certain tax burdens and yet ensure that enough tax comes in for our government to keep functioning. I mean, that's not simple. What about the matter of the government shutdown and the fact that we heard so much about refunds from the IRS being slowed down quite significantly? What can you tell us about that? Are things still slowed up at the IRS, or are they a little more back to normal by now?
Well, we just looked on the IRS website, tells you how behind or where they're at, and it said 21 days for a refund would take 21 days right now, but some people are getting it much sooner, a couple weeks maybe, and I think it just depends on that.
Right. I have a great gauge on that usually. If my clients do not get the refunds in a timely manner, I hear about it right away usually. And I have not really
from your clients.
I have not heard a whole lot this year, even compared to other years. So I'm assuming that they're sort of on a timely basis.
You mean they would complain to you if they didn't get it?
They wouldn't complain. They'd say, what's going on?
Yeah. Sure. Well, one thing I wanted to point out is on our website, we have a link. It's www.aocpa.net. We have links that anybody can go on and find out where their refund is at. So if they've filed their tax return, there's a link for federal, Wisconsin, and Illinois, and you can click on that and you put in certain information and it'll tell you where the process is that they've received it, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening with that. And I think that's a valuable resource for mm-hmm. people to, anybody can, not just our clients, but anybody can go to our website and get that information.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. We haven't even talked about state taxes, or if we have, it's been by accident.
Right.
But in general, are we not looking at anything nearly so significant in terms of changes in state tax law?
No,
not at all this year.
Yeah.
So that's just business as usual, yep. which you probably is much to your relief, I should think.
Yes.
That would be a lot to figure out.
I don't know about you, Amy, but working with clients this year, then, you know, going through their federal return with them and explaining all the new rules and how the new things are done, then you finally get to the state return, you're like,
a big sigh of relief.
Just a little like last year, so it's easier to understand, easier to explain.
Absolutely, yeah. that makes a big difference. In our closing minutes, I want to hear a little bit from you about, especially with, I suppose, an individual taxpayer, but I suppose maybe with a small business owner as well. Typically, what is the process like by which you work with somebody for the first time? What are they bringing to you, and what are you giving, in a sense, to them?
I think, for our firm, probably first up would be a brief consultation, either on the phone or in person. We kind of talk about what they have going on and what we might be able to expect. From that point, we get all their documents. We get them into our software system. And, you know, that's kind of the basic service, just getting that tax return done. What we kind of pride ourselves on is taking that time to sit down with the client and explain the actual tax return. So many people don't understand it. They see a bunch of numbers and they don't even want to think about it. So, you know, we try and explain the tax return. We try to ask them, okay, what's going to change next year that you know of? What can we plan for? Make sure you don't have any nasty surprises next year. Or maybe their income's going down. Maybe they can, you know, make changes in how much they're withholding. Maybe they'll have a little more in their pocket every week then. So I think that's the biggest thing with our services. Yes, we get your tax return done for you, but we try to offer more. So, you know, you're getting more for your money. You're getting some advice. You're getting something to think about. And we're there all year long, too. If something comes up during the year, we're there for you to give us a call and answer your questions and run some numbers for you.
Corey, as you're sitting down with a client, what would be some of the changes that would really matter, especially when it comes to somebody's taxes, the kind of change, I mean, and certainly some changes you can't anticipate at all, but what would be an example of a couple of the most important kind of changes that someone conceivably could anticipate and that would make a difference in what you do?
Hey, I'm going to sell this rental property, you know, something like that, you know, tell me in the year that it happens, okay. You call me in June or July or summer, whatever. You can say, I'm going to sell property A for this amount of money. You know, what are my tax consequences going to be, you know, next year? How can I prepare for that? Should I be putting money aside for this? What should I be doing? How much money should I put aside for this? Things like that. Or maybe if I'm quitting my job, moving to another area, things like that. Any kind of big life change like that would warrant a call to your tax accountant, I believe.
I think that would make a difference. I can remember my wife and I, we for a long time, because I've had multiple jobs, and so that's always been a really bad situation for my taxes, because I have one full-time job, two fairly substantial part-time jobs, and those part-time jobs never would withhold nearly enough. Mm-hmm. And so it was always bad news at tax day. And I remember when we would walk in to meet with the person who did our taxes, she would always ask it. When we would first drop our things off, she would always ask kind of good-naturedly, so did you sell a house this year? And we'd always have to say no, sorry, because like that would have been the cure-all if we'd sold our house or something. And of course, it's an example of how not to do it. I mean, like in retrospect, all these things you wish had happened that year that would have improved the tax situation. And I think we failed for many years to be more proactive. And I guess that's part of what you're talking about in terms of the connection you try to forge with clients, is you try to think proactively and anticipate changes for good or ill and the difference that's going to make.
Right. I am new with A&O. I've joined their firm in December. I have over 25 years experience working in public accounting, and I have been thoroughly impressed with the personal touch that A&O puts on with their clients, and also how proactive they are reaching out to their clients. Like with last year's tax, I mean, after I got here, I found out that they had been very active reaching out to their clients about the new tax law that we've been talking about today and things like that. So I think they do a really good job of that and very impressed.
And what we should probably say is for anybody listening, you should make sure that you are with somebody who is taking that time, because that's what it takes to really understand this thoroughly and to understand your own situation. And if you're not getting that, make sure you demand it from whoever it is that is assisting you. Kathy, Andrea, remind our listeners one more time of the website address for your firm and everything that people are going to find there.
Our website is www.ao, which is Andrea and Orndorff, aocpa.net. And on our website, you can see all the staff. We have pictures of our staff there. We have testimonials from other clients and these wonderful links. One of the resources we have, you can link a lot of different services there that help you get to references and information. So it's www.aocpa.net.
And if you ever have any questions, just call us directly and we'll be happy to answer them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Kathy, Andrea. Thanks. Corey Ebley and Amy Trottier, all from ANO LLP. I have really enjoyed this conversation, even though it's been about the topic of taxes, which nobody particularly enjoys. But I think a conversation that is helpful and illuminating is something that everybody can enjoy. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know it's a busy season for you. So thank you for making time for the morning show today.
And thank you so much, Greg. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to have you here. Monday on the morning show, we will shift gears rather dramatically, and my guest is going to be Rachel McPhee. And Rachel happens to be the daughter of Norm McPhee for many, many years, the director of the Racine Theater Guild. Rachel McPhee Benson is now a professional actress, and she is coming back to town to perform her one-woman show, Deadshot Mary. And I believe her husband is going to join her, who is actually the playwright responsible for putting the show together. On Tuesday, Jennifer Sassaman from the UW Parkside Theater faculty, they're about to do the musical Urinetown, a really interesting musical. It's going to open on the 8th of March. On Wednesday, I will be speaking with David Cullen, who has written a very powerful book called Parkland, Birth of a Movement. And he follows some of the young students of Parkland High School and the work that they have done in the movement for gun control, and tells many of their personal stories. On Thursday, attorney Michael Fegley, who is the director of the mock trial program at Carthage, they are a blockbuster success. As a matter of fact, they are headed to nationals, and they will be competing with some of the most prestigious universities in the country, and we'll be finding out all about that mock trial program, and a couple of the students involved will be part of it as well. 1 week from today, next Friday, Tom Clave, a New York Times reporter, but also best-selling author, will be talking about his latest book called Wild Bill, the story of America's first frontier gunslinger. We remind you that the morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Support also comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers at carthage.edu/admission/transfer. We're approaching 9 o'clock.